The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
One thing that is starting to become apparent about COVID-19 is that some of the people who get it are finding themselves kind of very changed by it in their outlook, and kind of psychologically are not quite scars, but I think it is definitely, you talk to people and it's leaving its mark on them. And Mary Louise O'Donnell, you're among the 200,000 people in this country who got COVID, and it has changed you.
Well, it did, insofar as it terrified me and petrified me. I remember sitting around, you know, months before saying, well, if I ever got that, I'd be grand. Sure, I'll get through that. It's no problem. I've no underlying conditions, and all the sort of mantra.
Yeah. And how sick did you get?
I got it. And I was petrified, and I got more fragile and more debilitated and weaker by the day, to the point where you couldn't really sit up. And then you were in a different space. You know, you mightn't have the chest problem, you know, or a blood pressure problem, but you had other problems, that you, because we are energy. When your energy goes, you have no sense of decision or humor or conversation, and you see yourself fading in front of yourself, not able to actually move and not able to save yourself, you know, because it's more psychologically and psychologically, you know what I mean? And it's petrifying. And I found myself in tears, because the pain and all of that, because pain sometimes lets you know you're still alive, you know, but the shooting pains, the muscle pains, the debilitation, the fragility, it was just appalling. And sometimes we just think of people who have left us, you know, because of their chests and all other underlying conditions, or not. And I was just in a terrible state. And, you know, you realise too, because it galvanises so much for you when you're there for hours and hours and hours and days, and it won't lift. And then it lifts and it comes back. But you realise how dependent we are on other people and on their ability and on family and on kindness and on the sun and on wind and rain. You start thinking in a completely different way. And it changed me in that way, that I would have great fears about dying and death, and I would have lived with them all my life, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I have written about that. I sort of didn't mean to talk about it, but written to people who might read it, Brendan, you know, about being afraid of dying.
Because most of us manage to kind of ignore that as we go along in life. Like, would you think about death a lot, yeah?
Well, it's a kind of what Larkin calls an arid interrogation every day. It never goes away, and then no sense of bravery will take it away. It's there all the time. But, I mean, people carry all kinds of things. I don't carry it as a hump on my back, but you carry it as a kind of, it's a part of you, a part of your joy, who you are. And you just carry it, and it goes away, fades, comes back, goes away. It's interesting that I had a wonderful friend who died in her 50s in the hospice. And I went into her every night of the week before she died. And I said to her, her name was Liz Raythorne. I said, Liz, don't die. Please, I can't. Please don't die. Please. And she said to me, I can't stay. I can't stay. I must go. And it came back when I was unwell, because when you get very unwell, it's all right to go. And it's a kind of a calming thing for people who might have lost a parent, but maybe it's all right. You know, they were so unwell. I felt so unwell at one or two days that if I had, you know, slipped away, or if I'd gone into a deep sleep, it would have been all right. So it kind of took the fear away. I saw it in a different way. Might have gifted me something really small, you know.
So you were kind of tempted at times, you felt so sick, to just go, actually, will I just let myself slip away?
Well, it was more difficult to stay alive. That's wrong. The energy, I'd lost my energy. And if you want to talk about a god, you know, if you want to talk about what is it about the planet, or the blue planet, as Sagan calls it, it's energy. Without energy, without breath and air and energy, we're nothing. And when your energy starts to go, as it does with people who are very unwell,
Yeah,
start to close down. And that's the fear, that you can't save yourself. And it did come back, gradually comes back. And sometimes during the day now, it goes away for about 20 minutes. And I think, but God, it's going again. You know, like a feeling you're going into some other place. So it's very, very, very tricky, sly, evil, vicious virus. And it attacks the thing in you that may have, maybe weak or maybe, no, weak is the wrong word, but maybe fragile in you, whatever, physiologically or psychologically. And people should take it extremely seriously. You know, because I think they're silly not to take it seriously. They're not listening when they don't take it seriously, because it has sent people to their gods, you know, who have been very well and in their 40s and 50s and in their 30s. So it's not just about underlying conditions and people who are in their 90s.
Did you end up in hospital, Mary-Louise?
I did, yes. And I, you know, without Dr. Lucy Gibbons, she was emergency medicine. In fact, all the women who dealt, all women who dealt with me, you begin to think, God, isn't Ireland a great, great island? Our level of education, we should be still pumping. We should learn a lesson from this. Pump money into education for everybody. It's so important, because they came to save us and they're still saving us. The strength of our hands on my back, the strength of our organisation and the strength of nothing to see here, these people are ill, move on. You know, like the strength of our organisation was just extraordinary. You know, and you are childlike. You are back in a state of somebody to lead you. So I thank them greatly. They were fantastic to me. Really wonderful to me in every way.
Yeah. You started kind of praying to your late father.
I did, yeah.
So you almost went back to wanting your daddy.
Yeah, to come back. You do. The ancestors have an awful lot to offer. And sometimes we're constantly, constantly looking to the future. What are we going to do tomorrow and all the future? Well, I don't see it like that. I was kind of psychologically crying out to the ancestors to come back into prayer. I mean, prayer, it just is an articulation, a kind of who you are and what you are, silent or choric, you know, where you pray in the chapel with others. But that's where I went. I went back to the memorari, to father, to aunts, to people who had sculpted you, minded you in whatever way, and you go back there, and there's nothing wrong with going back there and having some platform of prayer when all of the medicines or the wards and the tubes and all of that, and I was lucky that didn't happen to me, but prayer for me is the commune. Do you remember Gay Byrne had a program many, many, many years ago where he had a man on and he said to him, would you please explain to me what the communion of saints is? And I remember as a young mind listening to this, because we used to hear about it when we were young, and that's what it is, your ancestors. And they are in the energy. I'm back to the whole idea of energy. And if you look at the blue planet, it is our energy destroying it. And there was my energy being taken away.
Yeah.
And who was going to give it back? The energy of the ancestors. There's nothing wrong with it. And prayer to whatever your God or whoever your gods are.
And had you always prayed?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I believe that prayer is it's personal, it's private, it's your voice, internal voice or your external voice. It's lyrical, it's musical, the memorari, remembering Most Gracious Virgin Mary. It's like a lyric. All those Corpus Christi prayers, all those, the rosaries, the man, all that voice, that internal voice, all those words, all that language, and it just calms the spirit. It's like a forest. Calming the spirit. I prayed. I think prayer is poetry. Paddy Kavanagh used to say, prayer is theology, it's not literature.
Yeah.
Or no, poetry is theology, it's not literature.
Yeah,
and for me, prayer is poetry, is my connection there. Oh, I did remember, O Most Gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone had said to thy protection, implore her help, or saw the intercession was left unaided, inspired with his confidence, I'd fly unto thee, O Virgin of Virgin, my mother, to thee do I come, before thee I stand, simple and perfect. O my God, I've been despised not my petition, but graciously hear and grant, amen. It's a kind of it's a poem, Brendan. It's a kind of an articulation of a plea and an implore and an ask.
Yeah.
As opposed, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Yeah, of course, a lot of people who...
It's a plea at another level, and there's nothing wrong with it, and people should pray it will help. Certainly help me, and I would recommend it, and I recommend calling out to the ancestors, because what did they do but sculpt you, you know?
Yeah,
and chisel
yeah.
you. The good
Funny,
ones,
Michael
the good
Harding was... Michael Harding was saying the same thing here last month, I think it was. He seems to have reconnected with the ancestors as well.
Yes.
Do you feel they're important right now?
Oh, absolutely. It's like as if, you know, like, where do you go? Like, sometimes I feel now there's nowhere to go except you're just in a marketing bubble, or you're in an advertising bubble, or you're in a profit bubble, or you're in a... the traffic bubble, or you're in a car bubble, or it's another bubble, and people are fighting to find space for themselves. That everything that happened in the past can't have been wrong. And I'm not talking about the physical things that happen to people and the cruelties. I'm not talking the sorrows that they bring with them. I'm talking about the others who would have influenced them and gifted them. Of course, it's like as if we have this idea that we know it all, that know-allness went away too, that awful know-allness, and that awful bubble we're all in, that we've been all sorted, we know it all, because a friend of mine, Kay Conroy, said, she's a very fine psychotherapist, who, by the way, was in 7 days in Vincent's herself, said to me, when did you think for 1 minute that anything was certain? We all looked at her before Christmas. There's no such thing as certainty. That's an illusion. Look to other things. You know, stop looking for all this certainty that we're moving forward and we know what we're doing, and look at me and I'm up there and I'm so no one. God, we can work this out. We can, of course, within science, and I don't mean that, and with all the great discoveries and all of that. It's about really self, you know, that you have to look somewhere else silently, you know, for yourself, to find a space in yourself and to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would look, they would have as much to give me through the ether. That's what I mean, you know, through the imagination and the ether, and through their writing and their stories and their sayings and their songs and their prayers and what they had to say and the way they lived, as anybody standing tomorrow. I think that we have lost a balance of that. And you can see that in our destruction of the blue planet, where we think we should all go to Mars, where you can't breathe.
So it's interesting then that you've lost that kind of, I suppose, that almost arrogance we have about that, you know, we're in charge of stuff. And
absolutely,
then clearly...
we're in charge of nothing.
It's made,
absolutely
yeah.
nothing, Brendan. And I think that that's not a thing you will teach young people. You know, you have to give them a sense of their independence and that they're standing, you know.
Yeah.
It's another way of standing for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll be honest with you, you know, there were 90% of people who are running the place. I don't mean our politicians who are trying very hard. 90% of the organizations which have trapped us in a kind of a serfdom, all these globalized organizations where we're trapped with money and insured and food and all of that, all trapped, not to be believed.
So do you...
Their instinct is better.
Two questions then. Are you going to change how you live now? And do you think that this is going to change us as a society as well? You're obviously quite disillusioned with the modern world.
I think people will be changed. I think they'll be changed in tiny ways, in huge ways. I think they'll be changed because of the death of parents that weren't there, death of children, death of brothers and sisters. I think they'll be changed in traffic, where they sit, where they go, will they change their lives, will they go down the country, will they stay at home, how they rear their children, will they ask for different things of government, that you will give us the arts, you will put back music and visual art, you will give us our great sense of expression, and you will make apprenticeships where we teach people better how to use craft and skills, where we go back to what Mark Patrick Hederman called the arts people, who are the, what did he call them? He called them the cardiograph of the present and the prognosis of the future. Go back to people who would give us, you know, a sense of creativity in ourselves. Yes, I think things will change, and it's a very good time for the education system to change. Will I metamorphosize? Your friends of mine say that'll never happen, but yes, I will change. I will make a change, and it will be towards the sea. Absolutely.
Yeah, can't go wrong there. Mary Louise, before you go, you're kind of more or less retired now in one way, aren't you? Are you finding all this very lonely?
It's an interesting question. No, well, I was unwell for, I read a bit, you know, and I like to read that, and I love Foyle's War and Poirot, and I'm going to get a part in Poirot because I know all the series. I know them that way. No, because I am a conversationalist. Lonely is not the word. I would say it has shook me to my core.
Yeah.
About, you know, the way I have to face other things, you know, because all the bravery in the world doesn't minimize, you know, the things you carry with you. No, but I can understand the loneliness of the 98-year-old mother who's in a kind of beautifully minded by the little sisters of the poor, but effectively detained and has been for one full year, in possibly the last or second last year of her life. The loneliness of my relations who live on their own. I understand the loneliness of others. I can see it and feel it in their voices and in what they don't say. But people are very resilient and they do get on with it. But I've been spared that. But I have not been spared maybe the dark thoughts of the bag, the other bags you have to carry, you know. And other people carry paraplegia and they carry terminal disease and they carry loneliness, but I carry another kind of profundity, really. The profundity of leaving forever, shall I look at it.
Well, Mary-Louise O'Donnell, it sounds like for the time being you have your life force back. But listen, you've given us pause for thought this morning.
Thank you so much for that.
Okay, Mary-Louise O'Donnell, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.